Troya, I got to talk about how hydration is very important. I learned this recently. Hydration's not just for like running marathons and exercising and that. You need to be hydrated daily. It's daily maintenance, right? So if you're going to the airport or standing on the sidelines of your kid's soccer game in the hot sun, if you're on back-to-back conference calls, it doesn't matter, right? Proper functional hydration is essential. And Liquid IV is the number one powered hydration brand in America. Their hydration multiplier is the one product that you're missing in your daily life. Well, maybe not you, Toria.
It's true. I actually use Liquid IV. I've used it for probably almost 2 years now. It comes in so many yummy flavors. It's a little powder that you put in the water you're already going to drink. It comes in strawberry, lemonade, grape, lemon lime, pina colada, watermelon, so much more. It makes you feel so much better, so much faster when you need to hydrate.
And with just one stick of this stuff, you hydrate real life 2 times faster than water alone. So quit wasting your time with water. It's for losers. It's a loser's game. Plus, you get essential vitamins like B3, B5, B6, B12, vitamin C, 3 times the electrolytes of any leading sport drink, made with quality ingredients, non-GMO, and free from gluten, dairy, soy. Plus, this company, they want equitable access to clean and abundant water for everybody. And to date, Liquid IV has donated over 39 million servings in 50 plus countries around the world. So, Toria, how do we get this stuff?
So it's real people, real flavors, real hydration. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use your code OhMrChefPod at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code OhMrChefPod at liquidiv.com.
Use it now.
The Flushing Girl from Flushing. The nanny named Fran.
Oh, Mr. Sheffield.
Miss Fine.
Hello. Welcome to another episode of Oh, Mr. Sheffield, a podcast about the nanny, a hit sitcom from the 90s starring Fran Drescher. I am Shondi Pasquale, and I am here with...
Toria Sheffield.
That's right. And this week, we are back with Season 6, Episode 18, Yetta's Letters. Maybe my favorite episode of the entire series? What? This one was directed by Peter Mark Jacobson, which, of course... And much like last week, there was a handful of people involved in this one. So the story was by Bernard Viziga and Dan and Jay Amernick. And then the script was written by Dan and Jay Amernick. So a bunch of hands in this one. I tried really hard to find who wrote the musical sequences online, and I couldn't find anything specific about it. So I don't know if it was just the series composer or if it was these three gentlemen. I'm not really sure, but it was It was great. I wish so. If anyone knows, or Peter, if you are listening to this episode and want to reach out and tell us, that would be lovely, because I don't know, and I would love to know. I'll talk about it. I'll talk about it so much. So Toria, what is this episode about? And then let's dive in.
So this episode, it has several things going on. We are continuing the CC Niles subplot, but also Mr. Sheffield is looking for a new play, and it seems like Yetta's old love letters might be like his ticket to some real Broadway stardom. That was a really bad description, but I was like, what is it about? It's hard to explain this one.
Eloquent.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you again. You guys were doing a 2 a day, so I'm still on Australia time. So that's partly what's happening. But we do start this episode off exactly where we left
off
last week.
Nothing but the best for our final episode. For the series finale, we're going to both be sleep deprived.
And that's a promise.
Yes. Okay. Go ahead.
Fran and Maxwell, they have just stumbled on Cece and Niles in bed together, and now they're downstairs in the kitchen, like moments later, and they're rehashing what they just saw. And they're like, what do we do? And they're like, I guess we should just say nothing, right? Just as Niles comes down the stairs going, I'm too sexy. And he's like, I'm too sexy for my apron, too sexy for my blender. Just singing to himself. And he goes to the fridge and he grabs whipped cream and chocolate sauce and all this stuff, and he starts heading back upstairs, and Mr. Sheffield's like, don't you need anything to put that on? And then Niles just goes, I've got I've got something in my room, which we know means Cece. Bada bing, bada boom. Yeah. They're getting hubba, dirty hubba. And frisky. And then cut to later that week, we're in Mr. Sheffield's office. It's daytime, and he is in a very depressive state over his most recent play closing because he had clearly thought, you know, or had hoped it would maybe go to like the 49th Street Theater, which is like a big theater in the Broadway theater district. But instead, it closed. And then Cece comes in, and she is positively glowing. She is in the best mood we have ever seen Cece in. She's so happy. She even leans over to Fran's pregnant belly and is like, babies, 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 baby. like, well, good news, Maxwell. We have someone who will rent the 49th Street Theater from you and basically like take that huge expense off our hands. And at first he's really happy until he finds out that it is Andrew Lloyd Webber who is going to be looking for a new play to produce. So in response to that, Mr. Sheffield says he will not actually give anybody access to that theater. And he vows to find his own new show to produce in that space just so that Andrew Lloyd Webber can have it. So that kind of gets everything rolling. It really sets things up for what we have coming next. Because in the next scene, the doorbell rings and Fran goes to answer it. It's Sylvia and Yetta. Sylvia's holding like this antique wooden box. And Fran goes, what a gorgeous chest. And Yetta goes, thank you. Thinking they're talking about and then they open this like old antique chest that had belonged, it had like been in the family for several generations. Yep. And they're like pulling things out of it. And they find this old picture of like a handsome man. And Fran's like, ooh, Yetta, is this grandpa? And she's like, yeah. And then takes the picture and talks it away, which is definitely a joke, like a running joke with the fine women. Like when they're clearly lying, they go, and they also start pulling out old baby clothes because like they pull out this little dress, baby dress, and Yetta's like, oh, that was my dress when I was a baby. Your mother's is in there too. And then they pull out Sylvia's first baby dress and it's gigantic. But then this is where we really get cooking with gas. They find these old love letters that Yetta had written. And she reveals that she had actually fallen in love with a man named Richard before she met Fran's grandfather, Joe. And apparently, they had met on the boat coming over from Romania, and she had already had an arranged marriage with Joe in America, but she had never met him before. And when she got to America, she ended up having to decide who she would marry. But she wrote Richard, the guy from the boat, like letters almost every day for 5 years after that. But then kept the letters because she didn't have his address, which is why we have them now, which is very funny. And so while she's talking about this, we cut to a silent movie style flashback. That's of great. Yetta and Richard's first meeting.
I love this.
Did you love how so young good. Yetta was played by Anne Gilbert just in a brown wig?
I loved it so much. I loved the silent movie thing. This was a great episode.
Yes, it was such a funny way of like relaying that information. And she also mentions how they were separated at Ellis Island. And it is a great story. I wrote, what a story. And then in the next scene, Fran goes into Maxwell's office later that day and she's holding like an envelope full of Yetta's letters. And she actually pitches him the idea of turning these letters into a play because she's like, you know, I know you're looking for your next big idea. And like he even has like a stack of scripts in front of him that he absolutely hates. And he's like lamenting that there's nothing good out there. But he literally like poo-poos the idea. He's like, ugh. And he literally won't even read a letter. Meanwhile, the office phone rings and Fran picks it up. And it turns out it is Andrew Lloyd Webber's secretary calling to ask why Maxwell won't rent him that space. And Maxwell's like, oh, I don't want to talk to him. Tell her I'll write him a letter, get his address. So Fran ends up getting Andrew Lloyd Webber's address and jots the address down on the envelope that had Yetta's stuff in it. And then, because we're really setting up some dominoes here, Niles comes in and says that a messenger is coming to pick up the stacks of rejected plays because what they used to do before PDFs and emails is they would literally, like, as we've said before, send hard copies of these plays to messengers, and then they would return them if you didn't want them, you know, presumably so that they could be sent out to other people. It was a whole to-do. And I just wrote, though, da-dum-dum. But I don't think that's what I meant. I think I meant more of a joke. I think I meant dun-dun-dun, but I wrote da-dum-dum on my own notes. I meant the suspense version.
You got the dumb part right. Waka waka waka.
So then this chain of events takes us to several days later, when Brighton and Fran are reading the paper and they see that Andrew Lloyd Webber is coming out with a new musical based on a, quote, Yetta Rosenberg's letters. And it was like a Jewish immigrant woman, Yetta Rosenberg's love letters. And Fran freaks out because she realizes that those letters in that envelope must have been taken out with the outgoing mail when that messenger.
Mm-hmm. When Niles is walking out with the stack of envelopes, I literally went, no.
I didn't even notice.
Oh, I immediately was like, no. I did not know that it was going to end up in Andrew Lloyd Webber's lap, nor did I realize they were then going to show us Yetta in Paris with Andrew Lloyd Webber, who gives one of my favorite lines ever, which is, we could have gone to Epcot and seen all the country.
Yes, that's it. That's what she says to Andrew Lloyd Webber. Hold on one second. I'm turning the heat on.
Turn the heat around. Na 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 na. Turn it upside down. Love to feel it. Love to feel it. Turn the beat around.
But before we even get to Yetta in Paris, which would be the Netflix show I most want to see.
It's also my preferred song to the Kanye West and Jay-Z song.
But Fran realizes this and she's like, oh my God, Maxwell's going to kill me. Like, he's somehow going to blame me for this. And she's right. He runs in. He's furious. He's like, how did Andrew Lloyd Webber get, you know, access to our Yetta's letters? And, you know, she's like, well, you know, you weren't even interested in them, which is, to be fair, absolutely true. Like, he was not even going to, like, read a single line from a single letter. But she does calm him down and she's like, look, this article says they're in negotiations over the letters, meaning like we still have a chance. And he's like, well, this should be easy. You know, I should easily be able to, like, you know, get my own, like, grandmother-in-law's rights.
Stuff.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, she loves me. But then we cut to Yetta signing. She's, as you said, she's in Paris with Andrew Lloyd Webber because he's clearly wining and dining her. And this is when she says, you know, we could have gone to Epcot and seen all of Europe. But she's so charmed that she signs away the rights to her letters. And then in the next scene, Maxwell's in his office and Cece literally comes, like, almost floating in. She is so happy. She is in this, like, white floral dress.
She's like a Disney character. It's very funny.
Yes. And she's like, she's a true vision. We've never seen her dress like this or act like this. So it was very fun.
And she's like, hello, good morning. La, la, la. Like,
yes. And then she, like, steps out onto the balcony and, like, a dove lands on her hand. And she's,
well, they, and you know, they, like, hit her with, like, an extra spotlight. So, like, she glows when she walks outside. It's very, very funny.
Yep. And she's so high on life that she doesn't even care that Yetta signed the rights away to Andrew Lloyd Webber. Oh, and we should mention there is a running gag in this episode that, like, every time someone in the house, like, goes to try to get, like, olive oil or chocolate sauce or anything, they're out. And it's clear it's because Niles and Cece keep using it for sex.
Yes. Which, okay. I understand the chocolate thing, right? I get that. I can understand the appeal of chocolate. What are you doing with olive oil, though? It tastes gross. It can't be good for you to be in you.
Maybe massage oil?
Maybe. I don't maybe know. Like, that one baffled,
like,
me.
Bread. Maybe they're, like, running bread over each other's bodies.
It reminded me, did you ever see the movie Hot Shots?
The, yes.
Like, Top Gun parody. Yes. Reminded me of the sex scene in that where he's like, he like puts cherries on her and then he like cooks bacon on her stomach. And then like, it's, he puts like, he makes like a martini in her belly button. It's very funny. But yes, so yeah, all of the foods are being used in Niles and Cece's weird sexcapades. Season very sex true. Continues unabated.
And the rest of the household just like tacitly accepts it because they don't want to admit that they know they're having sex.
We also learn that Yetta visited Jim Morrison's grave while in Paris, which killed me.
And then, so Cece does not have a care in the world, even though she professionally probably should be worried about Yetta signing over these letters. But then Maxwell has an idea when he's talking to Fran. He's like, you know, Yetta's not exactly with it anymore. I can't imagine that that contract is valid. And no sooner does he say that, does Sylvia come in? And she's like, oh yeah, I've had power of attorney over Yetta for years. So they realize that like Andrew Lloyd Webber actually does not have a valid contract. And if anything, like they have the power position now because they can just get Sylvia to sign her mother's love letters over to them, which is all very opportunistic.
But it is. But and then we get a great beat where Maxwell's like, oh, well, cool. So like, what do we got to do to get that started? And then we immediately cut to Maxwell and Sylvia in Paris.
Yes. He now and has the wine goes, and dine her.
And she tries to call the waiter. And what she says is, Frere Jacques, could I have my dormez-vous? And she makes the sign for like, give me my check.
Yes.
So dumb. I love it. I loved it.
And also in that previous scene, we had a very funny sort of meta line where when Maxwell says that, you know, Yetta clearly isn't in her right frame of mind to be signing contracts, Fran goes, well, you know, other than her thinking we're Rob and Laura Petrie and she's our neighbor Millie, you know, she's just occasionally confused. And so, you know, that's a Dick Van Dyke reference. And Ann Gilbert was neighbor Millie to Rob and Laura Petrie, who were Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore.
It's great. It's great. I also really liked that they did a supercut of all of Yetta's like funny moments or dementia, but whatever perspective you want to have on it. And my favorite one, which I got reminded of, is Yetta in a changing room. And they go, Yetta, are you coming out? And she goes, in a minute, I can't figure out if I'm voting for Kennedy or Nixon.
Yes.
She thinks she's in the ballot box. I'm voting
for Kennedy or Nixon. Yes, that one made me laugh so hard too.
That one's great. So then we cut to 6 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
Hard cut. Weird playbill choice. Like, I get it, but weird, you know, that was the playbill choice.
I think it was, you know, it was played for laughs because we cut to six, we cut to later. The musical production, Yetta's Letters, has premiered. It is a huge hit. And we see the playbill, and it's just like a very current picture of Yetta in her like tracksuits and giant glasses. Still made me laugh. And then, so they're all in the kitchen now pouring over the reviews the next day. And it's sort of like, you know, Maxwell Sheffield has the hit of the season. Like this show has, it has Tony written all over it. And I guess we should also say we steamrolled over the fact that we see a big musical number from the show.
Yetta is so good.
It was so good. It was like they wrote like a real song and there's this young woman playing young Yetta singing about, you know, her love life and she's on Ellis Island and she doesn't know who she's going to choose. And they got, you know, real Broadway performers, you know, talented New York performers to be in the scene. And so then we actually cut to them the next day reading all these reviews around the table.
Yeah.
And so it's like when you earlier were mentioning production value and how maybe Peter Mark Jacobson had to like, you know, take a couple of weeks to really prep for this episode. This is the main reason why, because this is a big production for sitcom.
And then we also get, not to jump too far ahead, but we also get a very involved Niles musical number at the end of the episode. So, yeah, my thinking on PMJ not being there to direct last week's episode is directly because I think there was probably a lot of choreography that was happening, probably rehearsals. I mean, there's a lot that goes into doing even a single musical sequence, let alone two in an episode. So I'm sure that they were doing double prep. I'll bet the ranch on it. The ranch dressing, Sean, in my fridge.
Sean, you love your ranch dressing.
It goes on all my salads.
Oh, I hope you win this bet. I don't know what you're going to do without that ranch. Oh, there actually, speaking of the olive oil, this ties in because we find out that Niles and Cece have been using olive oil because when Niles brings in a salad to Mr. Sheffield, Mr. Sheffield goes, oh, you know, I don't like ranch. Like, where's my Italian dressing? And then he's like, yeah. We're out of olive oil.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I brought it up. I wasn't just making it up.
The ranch. No, but I thought the ranch.
The ranch thing? Oh, I see what you're saying.
Oh, I do love. I got to tell you, I read Priscilla Presley's memoir, Elvis and Me, recently, and they bought a ranch. It was a disaster.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So while they're reading these reviews, it's very funny because Yetta puts down her paper and she goes, what a story. I can't believe that lady chose the furrier over the handsome waiter. What a schmuck. She walks out because she doesn't even remember that this is her life story. It's just so funny, the idea that you would call yourself a schmuck and not even.
Well, yeah, because she's like a third party observer going like, well, that lady was an idiot. It's like, that's you.
But also, hey, I would say sometimes financial security is important as well. So, and going for the hot, going for some hot, attractive person, that's going to fade, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Listen, looks don't last forever, but money does.
Money does. Money. Hey, it's Wall Street too. Money never sleeps.
It doesn't have to. And then we get a really funny bit where Niles goes like, well, I'm very tired. It's time for me to go upstairs to bed. And he like very conspicuously like walks upstairs. And then like a second later, Cece goes, oh, and I'm also very tired. Time for me to go home. And then she proceeds to walk to the door, open it, slam it shut, and then quietly walk backwards to the stairs to run up to Niles' room. I like the description can't do it justice. It was very, very, very good physical comedy. It made me laugh, like actually laugh out loud. Like I thought it was just so funny.
It was so funny and goofy. And you know that, you know, you can tell that Mr. Sheffield and Fran, now they just blatantly turn a blind eye. Like it's so obvious.
Yeah.
And we also, some things to call out. Fran is way more pregnant now because we did a bit of a time jump in this episode from like when the letters get optioned all the way up to the actual production, which was kind of
six
nice.
Weeks, that we, you know, which is, you know, that's a long time in pregnant.
Yeah, that's a long time in pregnancy years. And then also we have a funny beat at the end where Fran's like, you know, honey, I think this show would make a great movie. And he's like, I'm right there with you. He's like, I'm going to be in touch with Sylvia in the morning to get the movie rights. And he's like, it should be easy. You know, I'm her favorite son-in-law. And then we got to Sylvia embarrassed with Spielberg getting wined and dined. And then the actual button on this episode, which again is very involved for a button, is Cece comes into the living room where Maxwell is reading the paper, and she basically is trying to help Niles get this play made, because we also find out in this episode that Niles's play that he wrote about a butler always like somehow gets pushed to the top of Mr. Sheffield's stack for review. And she's like, you know, Maxwell, I read Niles's play and it is fantastic. And he's like, oh, stop it. Like, I'm not going to put it on. I just can't see it. And then she's like, oh, what about now? And then cue spotlight hitting like the living room by the piano. Niles, who had been dusting, starts singing and dancing. And then an entire musical number grows around him with like backup dancers.
Yeah, with like a chorus.
And it like ends with him getting lifted above everybody's head.
Yeah. That's really great. Honestly, I would watch that musical. She wasn't wrong.
Yeah. And it was like, he's a $6 an hour man.
That's it.
And then that was the whole episode.
That was the episode. 10 out of 10.
Yetta's Lettas.
Ugh, Yetta's Lettas. The title reminds me a little bit of the Roar Jur from 30 Rock. Yetta's Lettas. What? I'm in a new movie. What's the movie called? Roar Jur. Oh, okay.
The Rural Jur.
The Rural Jur.
What a great show.
Great bit. All right, listen, it's time. It's time for segments. And the reason it's time for segments, and the reason this segments theme was chosen this week, is because of Yetta, who we should quickly mention before we dive in, had maybe the best jacket of the entire series, that America red, white, and blue sequins jacket. Holy mackerel. Oh my goodness. She is a beast and a hip hop legend. And that's why I've picked this segment theme. And now, segments.
Are we ready for segments?
We are so ready for segments. Let's go. All right, so segment time. Segments.
Should we move on to our segments? Should we get into our segments? Segments with Sean and Toria.
I really like that one.
Oh, man. My white grating voice had no business being paired with those sounds. So discordant.
All right.
Okay.
Favorite lines and moments.
I'll just say, like, everything with Yetta's Lettas and the flashback was just so good. But yep. I actually only flagged one actual line, even though I know that can't be true because I loved so much this episode. But I just wrote, so after Yetta regaled Sylvia, Fran, and Val with this story of like Richard or Joe or, you know, coming over on the boat, Val goes, well, Yetta, stop keeping us in suspense. Who did you end up with? Richard or Fran's grandfather? She's so dumb.
So dumb. I only had a couple. I mean, there was a billion moments that I kind of just called out as we went through. There was so many, so many good moments. But there were two specific things I really liked. I really enjoyed Fran torturing Cece and Niles. Like in the beginning, you know, because she knows they slept together, but they don't know she knows. And so she says like things like, I wonder if the butler did it and like stuff like that. Uh-huh. And there's a great beat where they give a very different kind of shot of Fran like walking out of Mr. Sheffield's office. And she says that butler did it line. And then Cece and Niles kind of like stick their heads or crane their heads around the door frame to be like, what does she know? And I just thought it was a great, I like that beat a lot. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I thought was very, very funny is Fran is in Mr. Sheffield's office and the phone rings and he's like, answer the phone. And she answers it. And he's like, pretend to be my secretary. And she says, with what may I help you with doing, please?
Yes. And then she whispers.
Write it down.
Yes. And then she whispers. She goes, Andrew Lever wants to talk to you. And Mr. Sheffield goes, tell him I'm not here. And she goes, he says he's not here.
It's so good. With what may I help with you doing, please? It was so, and he like looks at her like, what language is this person speaking?
This is like when Sylvia tries to speak classy to Elizabeth Taylor.
Yes.
This is an honor unparalleled in my universe.
Yes.
Okay. So then Yiddish, we had so much Yiddish this episode.
So much Yiddish.
Very fitting for a Yedda's Letta's episode.
Yes, of course.
I'll first mention the ones we've already heard, because then we have two brand new Yiddish phrases, which is kind of rare at this point. Like, usually we have a lot of like ones we've had before. But so we have tukis, which means bottom. Yeah. We have mesbuka, family. We have meshugana, crazy. Schmuck, a foolish person. Mm-hmm. But schmuck. Wow, that's a tongue twister. Schmuck, a foolish person. But so the two new ones, and then we can get into Sean's excellent little book. The first was Shedda. Shettle? Oh my gosh, I can't read my own writing. Shettle.
Yeah.
Shettle.
Yeah.
And as in the line, you had a whole Dawson Shettle thing going on back there. It is a Yiddish term for the small towns with predominantly Ashkenazi Jewish populations, which existed in Eastern Europe before the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. So like my family came from Shtetls.
Shtetl. It rhymes with like kettle.
I write these things down wrong. Also noticed this is the second Dawson's Creek reference we've had this season. So I bet someone on the writer's staff was a fan.
Hey, who wasn't, you know?
I mean, to be honestly, I should have said clearly the whole writer's room was a fan, because we were all watching Dawson this time.
Yeah.
And then there was also the word boychik, which is a term of endearment for a young boy or man, especially with whom someone is familiar. Boychik.
Yeah. Yeah. Boychik. I do have my little book. I'll start with Shtetl, because it's interesting. So it is a little city or a small town or a village. It is particularly in Eastern Europe, right, which flourished for the Ashkenazi Jews, kind of flourished before World War II. But this book says that there's a special importance in the history of Jews because it evokes special meaning and memories. So for a lot of people, most of the inhabitants in Shtetls were Jews, but this was specifically in a pre-World War II time. So this was the incubator, that this book says, of Ashkenazic culture. So Jews of Shtetls were typically poor, fundamentalist in faith, earthly, superstitious, stubbornly resisting of secularism or change. They wrote in Hebrew or Yiddish, and then they were, you know, dairymen and cobblers and tailors and butchers. It was the working class of Europe, of Eastern Europe, and a lot of like the you know, the things that we associate with Ashkenazic culture kind of like fermented in shtetls in this period. So they hold a special significance. I thought that was very interesting. I just wanted to talk about this book's terms on mishpucha, which yes, mishpucha is family, right? Relatives, near, far, whatever, but it's also ancestors. You know, this book says the term all Jews are mishpucha means, you know, that everyone is one family. All Israel is one, you know, and we all have one thing in common. We're all mishpucha, which I thought was really interesting as a just like a concept, you know, that we're all part of one big family. And then boychik is there's a the plural is boychelach, and the diminutive is boy. And the diminutive is boychickle, which I think is really cute too.
Boychickle, it's so cute,
like a little cutie, yeah. Boychik is typically used with affection. Oh, that's my boy. You know, hello, boychik. How are you, boychickle? Is usually uttered to males long past their boyhood. Generally used to or about an aging man. Boychik carries a tinge of sarcasm with it. So it's like, you know, at his age to go after young girls, this boychik is the example given. And also an alternate definition is it said critically. So it's like someone who cuts corners or is like a tricky guy, you know, he's some boychik, this guy, you know, like that. It's interesting. This book, the beginning of this book kind of delves into how one of the amazing and very unique things about Yiddish is that so much of the language hinges on sarcasm and on dry delivery. That like there's more words for sarcastic terms in Yiddish than in any other language. It's like, they have specific words that are just words that are meant to be delivered only in a sarcastic manner.
That's
amazing.
Incredible. That's incredible. I love it.
Yeah. So there you go. Okay.
I love it. So then who did Liz get you the book?
Elizabeth got it for me. I had put it on an Amazon wish list that I keep with like just books that I physical books that I would get throughout the year, and usually at this time of year all of my friends and family that have access to that list just kind of clear it out for me, which is great because I love physical books and I like mm-hmm. to hold books when I read them. Yeah. So I cleaned up this year. I did good.
New hotness books. Old, what is it? The new
old and busted,
old and busted internet.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Sean's hot takes. New no-nos. Okay, so Fran or the CC?
No. I don't know how many years we have to do it.
God,
Nanny trivia. And okay, so Andrew Lloyd, well, you know what? To your credit, you actually remembered Fran or CC at all this.
I know. I was so proud of myself.
Well, you know what? I can see because the book and delving more into those terms sort of felt like nanny trivia. And in fact, it's more interesting than the actual nanny trivia that I collected this week because I just said that the actor who played Andrew Lloyd Webber in a very, you know, bit part in this episode, it was an actor named Sam Mountain. And they clearly did try to find an Andrew Lloyd Webber lookalike. Although they put him in like a luscious wig, which was very funny to me. This man, yeah. Sam Mountain, he only had one other credit to his name. And that was a movie in which he played, quote, a control room worker. And I then looked up if Andrew Lloyd Webber wore a toupee or something. And no, they just gave the actor a luscious wig.
Yep.
Though he did have sort of a mop head of hair when he was young. So I guess it made sense. And that's it. That's all for trivia. And now we can do the Fran or the CC or the whoever.
In my head canon, they just never bothered to learn anything about the actual Andrew Lloyd Webber. They were just like, whatever. He's got a big head of hair. Who cares? It's very funny. Fran or the CC. Let's get into it.
I said I felt like Mr. Sheffield because I think I would be that petty that like it would just feel so good to finally get that win. He like, well, I would not like, you know, cut out my own good reviews and mail them to my nemesis as he is. It was just like, I was like, oh yeah, like I can kind of tap into that feeling of like mm-hmm. imagining like how it will feel when you finally get that thing, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not a petty asshole like you. So I saw myself more. I saw myself as Niles, quite frankly, because I also truly only want to like burst out into song and have a whole musical unfold about my very mundane life. So I related to it. I lived vicariously through it. I would love nothing more. Like a lot of people are like, oh, you know, I want to have a big party for my 50th birthday or I want this. Like, you know what would be the greatest gift for my 50th birthday? I want a flash mob to unfold. And I want to have choreography that I have learned that no one knows that I learned. And then I like just like I just that like that's what I want. I want to learn choreography in secret. Go to a public place with like friends and family and then just mysteriously break out into song and dance in front of them.
I think you heard it here first. Best. Sean wants to be the center of the universe. No, I agree. That would be so fun. Yeah. And everybody,
it would be hilarious.
We should post this on the, we should definitely post this on the Oh Mr. Sheffield feed. Sean got to go dance in front of hundreds, if not a thousand people, dressed as SpongeBob SquarePants. Or were you the star? Or were you Patrick?
Both. I was both. So I went, my buddy Matt Bennett does these amazing live shows with, I highly recommend everybody attend one especially if you're of a certain age range. Matt Bennett was on this Victorious. And so if you're of the age of that range and you grew up watching Nickelodeon and these kinds of shows, he does like all this whole DJ night where he like basically just plays music from that era. And so he did a show in town and we had a guest in town. And so I decided it would be fun to go. And then he was like, hey, I have these costumes that I bought, these like inflatable costumes of SpongeBob and Squidward and Patrick. And I was like, I'll put them on and dance around. And so I did. And it was very silly.
I am so sad I missed this. I am like, because even before all this, I've been like, I really want to go to one of those shows when they're in town. And like, finally he had one in LA and it was the same day I was leaving town. I was so excited.
He'll have another one. We'll bring you to the next one. But yeah, if you're interested in checking it out, it's Party 101 LA on Instagram. I think there's some videos of me up there already. And if not, my Instagram, Sean Wright, you can check out. And then we'll put it on our Oh Mr. Chef Pod one. Toria will figure out how to do that. And you can follow us there and talk to us there and all of that stuff. You can also email us at ohmrsheffieldpodcast@gmail.com. And Toria, guess what, dude? We will be back.
Oh.
Well, whoa. I was going to say, yes, goodbye. But we will be back next week with episode 19. And then we have only 3 more episodes after that left.
Wait, isn't I thought there was 4 more. 20, 21. Are there 23 episodes this season?
There's 22.
What?
There's only 22. Yep. We got 19 is Maggie's wedding. And then we start into the basically 3-part finale. We've got the baby shower and then finale part 1 and finale part 2. And then we're out, Toria. Isn't that crazy?
Did Maggie get engaged?
And no. Nope.
What?
I don't know. We'll see.
So confused.
Maybe. I don't remember it happening, but we'll find out. But yeah, so listeners, this is the final. This is episode 5 of a countdown to the finale. Next week, we got 4 left. I'm sad, Toria. We got to figure out what to do. We got to make some decisions. We got to figure out, is this the end? Are we going to take a little hiatus and then do like a little mini season of I would watch Beautician and the Beast.
That's what I was just about to say.
Yeah, I would watch that and do like a little mini. I don't know. We'll talk about it. There might be some ways that we could, maybe we'll watch like the pilots for the other shows too and do like an episode of that where we kind of talk about the pilots and how they set things up. And maybe we could compare those pilots to the Nanny pilot to see like how they've also kind of grown as, you know, Fran and Peter grew as like writer producers. That could be interesting. So we'll talk about it. We have to make a decision soon. And we are very grateful that you guys listen. And we'll see you next week. Toria, goodbye.
Goodbye.
And now, segments.
Are we ready for segments?
We are so ready for segments. Let's go. All right, so segment time. Segments.
Should we move on to our segments? Should we get into our segments? Segments with Sean and Toria.